Panel 1, The Trek to Mount Everest. Early in April of 2001, the National Federation of the Blind team, led by Pasquale Escatoro, arrived in Nepal, a small country situated between the lowlands of India and the high plains of Tibet. Nepal is a country of extremes. Hot tropical forests thrive within its borders, but it also is home to the world's highest mountains, the Himalayas. Mount Everest is the highest of the high and the focus of Eric Weinmayer's dream.
Mount Everest, the tallest point on Earth, 29,035 feet. For a sighted person, climbing Mount Everest is one of the greatest physical challenges on the face of the earth. Ever since I went blind and began reading books in Braille and on tape about pioneers like Tenzing Norgay and Edmund Hillary, it's been a dream in the back of my mind to climb the world's tallest peak. If I can climb Mount Everest and stand on the summit, it will transform the image of blindness and forever change what it means to be blind.
The team made its way to Lukla, where they began the arduous trek to Mount Everest. The leader, PB, described it this way.
To get to Everest Base Camp, we will trek more than 35 miles up into the Khumbu Valley. In all, it will be a 9-day trip with over a 10,000-foot elevation gain. The trek up to Everest is a great adventure. It's a good time for us to acclimatize to the altitude and to clear our minds for all the challenges that will lay ahead. We're going to pass through places with exotic names like Tangbache, Dingbache, Namche Bazaar, Pangbache, and Dugla. All the while, we will move closer and closer to Mount Everest.
While passing through the Khumbu Valley, the homes of the Sherpas, they came face to face with the culture of Nepal. Go to the bottom left-hand corner of the picture frame and move to the right about 4 inches and up a half inch from the bottom of the panel. This is a Sherpa carrying a doko, large cone-shaped bamboo pack that porters carry on their back with a strap that instead of going over their shoulders like our backpacks, loops over their forehead. They keep their balance by using a walking stick. Everyone carries goods in the Khumbu region. People, yaks, you can find 1-4 inches to the right of the Sherpa, and even the dog, which is directly in front of the yak, can't escape carrying his fair share. Motorized vehicles are not able to navigate the steep, rocky terrain. Scan up the hillside behind and above the Sherpa to locate the 3 typical Nepalese homes that are situated there. The people of Nepal are also very religious. Everywhere you can see evidence of this in the stupas like the one that is located directly above the dog. A stupa is symbolic of the Buddha. Prayers are inscribed on the rocks that line the paths. Directly to the right of the dog is a circular stone mandala leaning against a prayer wheel wall. Find the 5 can-shaped drums. A prayer wheel wall is situated in the middle of the path so that people can always pass to the left and reach out to spin the wheels. In this way, the prayers that are inscribed on the outside of the drum-shaped wheel and the paper prayers placed inside them are released to bless the world. In the distance, at the top of this picture, you can feel the jagged outline of the mountains. By moving in from the left-hand side of the frame about 12 inches, you can locate Everest. It is marked with a circular quarter-inch gold marker. Amadablam is the tall, steep peak about 12 inches to the right of Everest. This is the first peak that the NFP team attempted to summit in 2000. They were turned back by bad weather and bad luck, but they found their team strength that served them well in the 2001 Mount Everest expedition.
Panel 2, Base Camp. This panel shows the layout of the NFB Expedition Base Camp. Starting at the lower left-hand side of the panel, scan the area and experience the jumble of rocks that made walking through the camp so difficult. From the lower left-hand corner, move to the right 6 inches and up 1 inch to find Eric Weinmeier's tent. This is a small, one-person domed tent. Move to the right 3 inches. You will find the larger two-person tent of Brad and Reba Bull. Move 2 more inches to the right to find Peavy's single-man tent. Directly above Eric's tent is Maurice Perret's tent. Maurice described it this way.
Base camp is actually on a glacier. It is, in fact, a glacier covered with boulders. So your tent is sitting on top of a pile of rocks under which is just ice. And so that makes for very interesting living as springtime is in full swing and the sun is beating down real hard during the day. So it's constantly shifting and cracking and there are rock slides and avalanches at night that can be heard in the distance.
Maurice Perret was the NFB base camp spokesperson of the expedition. This tent is the same size as Eric's, but it is illustrated here as smaller because it is further away. Directly to the left of Maurice's tent, about 6 inches, are two small but important tents. One is the toilet tent, and the other the shower tent. Above and to the left is a large rectangular kitchen tent. Directly above Maurice's tent is the larger Sherpa's tent. Peavy said,
basically what the Sherpas do on our expedition is do everything but carry us up. The Sherpas carry our oxygen, our food, our tents, our rope, everything. They carry it up the mountain, they go through the ice fall, they set up our camps. They're basically the lifeblood.
To the right of that is the large team dining tent. The all-important communication dome, called the Love Dome, is to the right. This tent was the command center of the entire expedition, helping to link them to each other and to the outside world. Maurice Perret.
The suspense, the disappointment, all the emotions that you go through, the whole roller coaster, paralleled very much what was happening on the mountain and what was happening at base camp, so I didn't miss a thing.
To the upper right of the Love Dome is the Puja, a blessing for all the expeditions in base camp that season. This is a large pile of rocks used to support a very tall pole, which has long ropes decorated with prayer flags. These ropes are then attached to encompass the entire base camp. Here you can see one of the ropes with its flags waving in the breeze. As the flags move, blessings are given up to the mountains for the climbers and support crews. PV.
We had a team of 13 climbers that were totally dedicated. We had base camp staff of 7 Westerners. We had 13 climbing Sherpas and a base camp of 10 Sherpas. So you can imagine we had over 40 people on the mountain that were working all the time for the success of the team.
In the center of this panel, above the base camp, you can feel the rough texture of the Khumbu icefall. The smooth shoulder of Everest is on the left, and Lhotse, the fourth highest peak in the world, is on the right.
Panel 3. Mount Everest, South Col Route. First, quickly scan the entire mountain. This is Mount Everest. Go to the bottom left-hand corner of the frame and move to the right 2 inches and up about 1. You will find a small oval marker that has the letters B and C for base camp. Base camp is at 17,500 feet in elevation.
Base camp. We will call this place home for almost 2 months. If all goes well, we'll be making our first attempt on the summit after about 6 weeks of preparation.
To the right of this oval is a silver bead chain describing the serpentine route up through the Khumbu ice falls. You can feel the rough texture of the Khumbu.
My first trip through the ice fall was definitely the hardest thing I'd ever done in the mountains. The ice fall to me is a blind person's worst nightmare. I can't imagine crossing it again, maybe even 8 or 10 more times.
Once you pass through the ice falls, you arrive at Camp 1. Find the oval marker with the number 1. This camp is roughly 19,700 feet above sea level.
The terrain from Camp 1 to Camp 2 across the Western Khum, it's pretty moderate. It's nice snowfields with a few ladders that you cross over crevasses. I feel much more comfortable where I know that when I take a step, it's going to come down on the ground.
On the right-hand side of the marker, the bead chain continues. Follow it to Camp 2 at 21,000 feet. The bead chain continues from the top right-hand side, crossing the face of Lhotse to Camp 3 at 23,500 feet. You are now entering the dead zone.
We are on the Lhotse face, and this is where we are most at risk of being hit by falling rocks.
Watch your head! Rock!
All right, Eric. Go ahead and just follow the rope. Hey, Biggie, stop right there. There's a 1 foot crevasse behind you.
Rock!
Hey, Eric.
That rock could have ended the expedition and even taken Eric's life.
Stop.
From the top of the oval, the beads continues up to the South Col into the saddle of the ridge between the peaks of Lhotse and Everest. The winds are fierce as they blow over this ridge. Camp 4 is located here at 26,000 feet.
Above Camp 3, you enter what's called the death zone. It's where your body has stopped acclimatizing. You're not really able to assimilate nutrition. You're like a ticking clock. I mean, you're starting to die up here. You got to get to the summit now as quickly as you can and get back down.
Now, reach around the back of the oval to find the chain and continue up the mountain to a small goal marker, which is the south summit at 28,700 feet. This is a mere 300 vertical feet from the true summit of Mount Everest, but it is still hours away.
If I fail on this peak, I think people say, oh, well, of course he did, he's blind. Or if he succeeds, they say, wow, he overcame blindness. But blindness isn't always the issue.
The last inch of chain will bring you to the end and the final marker, which is the summit of Mount Everest, 29,035 feet, the top of the world.
sometimes people say, if you can't see the mountain, why do you climb it? What's the point?
Right now I'm feeling the wind, you know, the wind shifting, blowing up against my hands, blowing on my face, blowing back through my hair. I'm feeling the sun. I'm feeling the glare. I'm feeling little snowflakes hitting me in the face and listening to these incredible little birds zipping around over my head. I'm hearing all the voices. And I can also hear the fact that, you know, there's these big mountains around us that are just huge. I can hear the sort of the echo off of them. And I can tell we're way down below them. So I get a lot out of the scenery. It's just not visual.
Reach above the summit and feel the large plumes of snow and ice crystal clouds that form above the summit. The jet stream winds that pass over the summit whip these beautiful formations high into the sky.
Panel 4, Khumbu Icefall. This is a detailed picture of one of Eric's 300 ladder crossings that he made on this expedition. On the left-hand side is a surek, or chunk of ice. Even though it towers above the climbers, it is not a particularly large surek. They can get as large as a skyscraper. They are all extremely unstable and make climbing through them extremely risky. Find the ladder. Each end rests on the edge of the crevasse or gap in the ice field. As each climber walks across the ladders, he pulls the ropes taut from the far side and lets them fall slack behind. Here you can see one of Eric's teammates talking with him as he makes the crossing.
I remember the first day through the icefall was a big test for Eric and an interesting moment in the expedition because we really weren't sure how it was going to work out. The ladders are something that all sighted climbers really dread. And the amazing thing about it was that when we got there, Eric found that compared to the rest of the jumble of the Khumbu Icefall, that the ladders actually provided some regularity. That to him, at least he knew that once he was on a ladder, the rungs were going to be pretty evenly spaced. And although they kind of tipped and had different angles and stuff, that it was a much more controlled terrain than the rest of it, which is just such a jumble of snow and ice. And it was sort of one of those interesting twists that we hadn't expected, that Eric was actually looking forward to the ladders compared to all the sighted climbers who would look down at these crevasses and wonder what they were doing there. I think Eric had the opposite reaction when he was walking over all the rest of the snow and ice.
The walls of the crevasse drop down to unknowable depths. The entire Khumbu Icefall is made up of ice blocks of all sizes, sliding, grinding, and tumbling down through the valley formed by the shoulders of Mount Everest and Lhotse. On Eric's first trip through the ice falls, he took 13 hours to reach Camp 1. His second trip took 9 hours, a great improvement. Eric was able to complete his fifth and final trip up through the falls in a remarkable 5 hours.
Panel 5, Summit Day, the Final Ascent. This panel shows Eric on the left-hand side of the picture in profile facing right as he stands on the south summit. The true summit of Mount Everest is to his right. You will recall from panel 3 that the south summit is very close to the true summit. Go to the bottom right-hand side of this panel and scan up about 1 inch. You will find a large bead chain that describes their path across the south summit. If you feel to the right a few inches, you will find the edge of the ridge that drops straight down to Tibet. When you reach the end of the large bead chain, it indicates the place where the path descends down the back side of the ridge and then reappears as a smaller bead chain a little to the left.
You have to defy your survival instinct and climb down the back side of the south summit and across the knife-edge ridge.
follow that chain up along the knife edge ridge and up the Hillary steps just before it rounds onto the summit. May 25th, 2001, Eric Weinmayer became the first person who is blind to stand on top of the world.
You're around the top. America moves.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Yes. Yes. Strong work.
Good job,
Eric. You did it, man.
Woo!
We're on top of the world. We are on top of the world. The apex of the planet.
I can't believe it.
Center of the cosmos. You did it, man. So many people doubted you. You showed them.
So many people
showed them.
We're only halfway there, guys.
We're
halfway there.
This is Kevin. Do you copy? Over.
I copy, Kev.
Eric, I love you, man. You're the best. You are the baddest dude on the planet, man. Over.
Tell me I love you, and I'll be down soon. And we're getting out of here. Let's go.
Yeah!
Yeah!
My name is Ann Cunningham, and I would like to thank you for visiting the Summit, the National Federation of the Blind 2001 Everest Expedition. I would also like to thank the NFB, Dr. Maurer, and Dr. Zaborowski for commissioning this piece. Thanks also to Eric Weinmayer for generously answering my endless questions. Maurice Perret, Brad and Reba Bull also graciously gave me their time to share vital information that made this project possible. Michael Brown shared memories, photos, and recorded narration that he has allowed me to use on this tape. These excerpts are from his thrilling award-winning film, Farther Than the Eye Can See, by Outside Television. I hope that this exhibit inspires you to learn more about this incredible expedition. Touch the Top of the World, A Blind Man's Journey to Climb Farther Than the Eye Can See, a book by Eric Weinmayer, and the film are excellent places to begin. The National Federation of the Blind website also has communications by Maurice Perret and the team sent live from the expedition base camp. Thanks also to Buna DeHall and Kevin Morley, the voices, Janice Page, the music, and Mike Jorgensen, the mixing for this recording.